Hello, and welcome to Get Woke or Die Trying. I'm your host, Robin Turan. First off, I just want to start by saying Happy New Year. Thank God it's not 2020 anymore. I hope everyone enjoyed their holidays safely and are ready to take on 2021 and all that it will bring, whatever that may be. If you're a recent college graduate, such as myself, the topic I'll cover today has probably piqued your interest. As the cost of education has steadily increased while wages stagnate, the U.S. finds itself in an unprecedented crisis of student loan debt. Over 45 million borrowers owe a collective $1.7 trillion in outstanding student loans. This is an amount that far outpaces credit card debt at $930 billion, auto loan debt at $848 billion, as well as medical debt at $45 billion. As President-elect Joe Biden has promised to set right many of the wrongs of the 45th administration by taking aggressive measures on a myriad of issues in his first 100 days in office, student loan debt forgiveness has been floated as something he could address through executive order and wouldn't require the approval of Congress. This is critically important as we await the results of the runoff election taking place in Georgia on January 5th that will determine the Senate majority. Just like many other issues, there's a lot of valid questions about if this should take place and why. Would it be fair? Is it realistic? And many more. Senators Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren co-authored a resolution in September calling on the winner of the election to waive $50,000 of federal student loan debt through executive action. This would address 92% of student loans. Similar to many other political topics, this one has a lot of nuance and is heavily influenced by the intersection of race and class. 43% of people who attended college have incurred some amount of debt for their education. As counterintuitive as it may sound, people with the largest sums of debt typically don't have as much difficulty paying it off, since higher levels of education often correspond with higher earnings. In the reverse, 22% of people with less than $25,000 of debt are behind on their payments. First-generation college students are more than twice as likely to fall behind on payments than those with parents who completed a bachelor's degree. A disproportionate amount of borrowers are Black or Hispanic, and these groups are also less likely to be able to pay off their loans. Based on the data, even a small amount of loan forgiveness, $10,000 rather than $50,000, could go a long way to help people, especially people of color. There's an argument that cancellation of student loans is a regressive policy since student loan debt is a mark of privilege among college-educated people. But 57% of people don't take out loans for college, and those are usually the households with an economic advantage. And although people with the most debt also usually have the highest-paying jobs, lower-income households with less debt experience far greater relief relative to their income. Additionally, high-income earners with good credit often take advantage of opportunity to refinance their loans at a lower interest rate through a private institution, excluding them from the federal loan pool and therefore federal student loan forgiveness programs. This move is likely to save them from tens of thousands of dollars over time just in excess interest. Another argument used by opponents of cancellation is that it represents a significant loss in revenue for the federal government. This assertion misses the mark in a few different areas. First, the boost from the stimulus of debt forgiveness far outweighs the amount that the federal government collects on loan payments each year. Secondly, a significant amount of student debt is already canceled for participants in income-driven repayment programs or IDR programs. Borrowers are required to pay a fixed percentage of their discretionary monthly income, and then after a predetermined amount of time, the remaining balance is forgiven. Depending on the program, this could be 10, 20, or 25 years. Borrowers on IDR programs repay 51% of their balances, compared to 80% for non-IDR programs. Expanded IDR has been proposed as a means of debt relief, but this creates higher rates of non-repayment and still forces people into decades of pointless payments while inhibiting them financially. This particularly is more likely to impact communities of color, as zip codes inhabited by predominantly Minorities have a much higher non-repayment rate. 62% have a current balance that exceeds the original balance, compared to only 49% for majority white zip codes. This is a glaring example of how lending practices for higher education directly reinforce the racial wealth gap. Black families already start with a disadvantage by stark disparities in generational wealth. This means they are more likely to have to take out loans and do so in a larger amount than white counterparts. This continues after schooling due to discrimination in the job market and less family wealth to do things such as purchase a vehicle, buy a home, or other financial decisions people might typically receive family help to afford. Black students are far more likely to experience loan default, higher interest rates, and greater graduate school debt balances. This disproportionate burden of reliance on debt to access a college degree and the associated wages perpetuates the racial wealth gap. Any proposals to reform higher education financing must also take into account how the outcomes are worse for people of color. In addition to making strides towards closing the racial wealth gap, student loan debt forgiveness can also go a long way to help stimulate the economy. With many of us living through two once-in-a-lifetime economic crises, any policy proposal that increases economic stimulus without bailing out corporations can be tremendously helpful. With our economy still reeling from the impact of the pandemic and facing the highest unemployment rates since official data collection started in 1948, there is no shortage of people that are hurting financially, many of which could have some of that alleviated by cancellation of student loans. This is demonstrated by the provision in the CARES Act to halt payments on federal student loans and freeze the accumulation of interest. While it's proven to be a helpful policy in the short term, it could reap even greater benefits in the long term. Essentially, what debt forgiveness accomplishes is increasing income. If you're not required to pay a significant portion of your income on student loans every month, you have more financial freedom to invest and make financial decisions that you otherwise might not have the ability to do. When the first stimulus checks were distributed throughout March and April, approximately 30% of people used it to pay down their debt. This shows that borrowers use a sizable portion of their income towards debt relief. Based on estimations by economists, with cancellation of federally held student loans, the U.S. GDP would increase anywhere from $861 billion to $1.1 trillion over a 10-year period. The impact that's not captured by large metrics like this is the ability of individuals and families to take greater financial risks. Without a cloud of debt hanging overhead, a whole generation of people would be given the opportunity to make major life decisions differently. Many people in their 20s or 30s don't have the main motivation behind big decisions as, is this something I really want? But more so, can I afford it? That comes to buying a house or a car, having children, or even starting a business. Millions of people are deferring home ownership due to an unfortunate combination of low wages, large amounts of debt, and high cost of living. The average homeowner has a net worth of $230,000, compared to only $5,000 for a renter. Home ownership is one of the most powerful ways for the working class to build wealth, but it's something that more and more people are financially unable to do. As of September, 52% of adults ages 18 to 29 live with their parents or other family members, the largest amount since the Great Depression era. This pattern is consistent with people in this age group being more likely to lose their job or have to take a pay cut, especially with the pandemic and the resulting economic downturn. These factors, combined with increasing amounts of debt, create quite an unfavorable financial situation that impacts the rest of the economy in a negative way as well. Many of the arguments covered so far have addressed broad-stroke economic implications, but there are also individual objections that are pretty common. The two that I've encountered the most are, I paid off my loan, so you should have to do the same, and the age-old classic, Don't take out loans if you can't afford to pay them back. Let me break down for you why neither of these are good reasons not to cancel student loan debt. The first is just downright selfish. Citizens of a nation should want the best for everyone, especially future generations, if they want to see their country thrive and flourish. We won't be able to do that if close to 50 million people, almost one in six, are struggling under the weight of tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans. Furthermore, since 1980, the average tuition at public four-year institutions has increased more than 200%. People who have been able to pay off their loans in full typically fall into one of two groups: high-income earners who make enough to pay off their loans without difficulty, or people who went to school when tuition was considerably cheaper and therefore had less to pay back. The second objection is honestly downright privileged and uninformed. Taking out loans to attend college is a huge financial undertaking entrusted to people who are usually only around 18 years old. Most teenagers don't have a complete understanding of the seriousness of such a sizable loan and how it can impact their future finances, especially first-generation college students who don't have a parent to guide them through this process. A student loan is about the only one you can get at that age. Not a mortgage, car loan, a small business loan, or even a credit card, usually without a cosigner with a reliable credit history. Additionally, this objection has a total lack of understanding about the current job market. In order to secure a job that you'll be able to make a living wage and be relatively financially secure, many of those careers require a college degree and possibly even an advanced degree. People shouldn't be relegated to a lifetime of poverty or unsatisfying work just because they may not be able to pay back the ridiculous amount of loans required to acquire the level of education they need. Working a job that you want shouldn't be a privilege only for people who can afford it. While student loan forgiveness could go a long way to correct some of the economic challenges people face, it doesn't address the causes of ballooning debt and the issues in the educational system. One of the culprits of the dramatic rise in national student debt is unfair loan servicing practices. Loan companies have cropped up in lawsuits in recent years for demonstrating predatory lending practices, as well as illegal and unethical behaviors. Loan management companies are supposed to help individuals manage repayment of their student loans, answer any questions they may have along the way, and provide assistance over the duration of the loan. But borrowers often struggle to find the information they need. Some loan companies have resorted to illegal practices such as threatening people, publicly releasing lists of people who aren't current on their loans, and initiating harassing automated phone calls outside of permissible hours. Some practices that aren't illegal but are considered unethical include lack of transparency, improper management of payments, and dishonesty about repayment options. Loan servicers have attempted to hide information about payment requirements, interest rates, deadlines, and more. They are also responsible for allocating the payments to the Department of Education once they're made. But sometimes they are purposefully mishandled and cause people to incur late fees, even when they paid on time. There have also been instances of loan servicers using bad faith practices to advise borrowers to go into forbearance rather than IDR programs, or intentionally providing vague or inaccurate information regarding loan forgiveness, consolidation, or specific repayment programs. The FDIC has also established terms of abusive loan practices, such as extremely high interest rates, greater than 36%, additional costs without a specified purpose or reason, unfixed interest rates that could double or even triple over the life of the loan, shortened timelines, prepayment penalties, or requiring high-risk assets to secure a loan. All of these practices result in borrowers paying more money than they have to so that loan servicers can pad their pockets. But many people are unfamiliar with what is considered appropriate, expected, and legal, making it easy for them to be targeted in these schemes. Ultimately, what it comes down to, as I mentioned in a previous episode on defunding the police, is that budgets reflect priorities. Would it be a costly measure for the federal government to forgive federally held student loans? No doubt, but it would help a tremendous amount of people. I'll offer you this comparison. It's estimated that the tax cuts passed in late 2017 will add $2.3 trillion to the national deficit over the course of 10 years. And the primary beneficiaries of this policy were high-income earners and corporations. The corporate tax rate was decreased from 35 to 21%, and people who made more than $200,000 saw the largest increases in tax refunds. Middle-class families and people earning less than $100,000 owed more on average. If budgets truly reflect priorities, then this shows that corporations and the rich are more important than the middle class and the average everyday American, and that needs to change. Canceling student debt would cost $600 billion less and benefit 38 million more people. The justification behind tax cuts for the rich are often rooted in a concept known as trickle-down economics. It's the theory that if corporations, business owners, and otherwise well-off individuals have more money by not paying as much in taxes, it gives them the ability to be more generous, pay higher wages, create more jobs, etc. And eventually that wealth will trickle down to the middle and lower class. But 50 years of economic research have shown that idea to be undeniably false. Tax cuts for the rich have only widened income inequality without providing any tangible effect on job growth or wages. The rich have only gotten richer. Since the start of the pandemic, 651 American billionaires have gained a combined $11 trillion in wealth. For a little perspective, they could give $3,000 to every American and still have just as much as they did before the pandemic. Meanwhile, unemployment rates have reached record highs. Millions of people are at risk for eviction or foreclosure, and food lines are stretched for miles all around the country. With all of this in mind, I personally think that cancellation of federally held student loans for people making less than $125,000 is a solid policy proposal that will have a positive impact on some of the most vulnerable members of our society and go a long way in correcting not only the racial wealth gap, but income inequality as a whole. There are certainly other reforms that need to take place, more funding for education so the burden doesn't fall on students, taxing billionaires, etc. But this is just one of the actions that Joe Biden could make with the stroke of a pen and improve the economic quality of life for millions, myself included. So while you take some time to think on all of that, I'd like to bring you a word from our sponsors. Thank you all so much for listening and tuning in for yet another episode. I encourage you all to follow on Instagram at getwoke_dietrying. And please tell any and everyone you know to tune in. You can find us on Anchor, which will give you links to all of the other streaming platforms this is available on. And you can also check out the show notes for all of the resources that were referenced in this podcast. Again, thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.